My name's Michelle Schabowski. I am the archivist for the PA History Society. Today's date is November 30th, 2017, and I am interviewing Dr. Michael Champion. How are you today, sir?
Very good, thank you.
All right. Can you tell us a bit about your background, like where you're from originally?
I grew up in Seattle, Washington, and like I say, I'm from Seattle, but I've kind of lived all over the world, so
yeah,
that's where I called home.
And where are you at now?
Well, this very moment, I'm sitting in Salt Lake City, Utah, but my home currently is San Antonio, Texas.
Okay. So what's your current position? Like, what's your current career job?
Ugh. Yeah, I'm a principal clinical specialist for the Terumo Cardiovascular Corporation. They make cardiac surgeries. Equipment, heart-lung machines, oxygenators, endoscopic vein harvesting devices, that kind of stuff. So I work as a clinical person for them.
And can you give us some of your career highlights? Like, how did you become interested in the medical field? How did you become a PA?
Oh, that's a long and sordid history. Okay, good. Well, I was originally I was a medic for the Army back in the 70s, a long time ago. And I had decided I wanted to go a little further into the medical field than just a medic, but I was looking at a couple of professions. I wanted to look into being a nurse anesthetist or a PA, and I had great pleasure of working with several really good PAs and some really good nurses when I was a young medic, and basically applied to both areas for schooling, and PA school picked me up first, and so that's the direction I went.
How did you learn about the PA career? Because it was still fairly new at that time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Back in the early 70s, there was very few. I was a medic in an infantry battalion, and we had this interesting medical officer called a PA. I really hadn't known anybody that was a PA before. I just had a very glancing knowledge of them when I was searching out careers, but they sort of impressed me with what they could do back then. It was just an amazing amount of skills and abilities. Most of the guys that I had run across were former Special Forces medics before they went off to PA school, so I know they had a lot of really good background before they went. So they just sort of took me under their wing and taught me some stuff, and it just got my juices flowing, so to speak.
So after you went to school to become a PA, did you stay with the military?
Yeah, what happened was I was in Korea in 1977, and I was getting to that point where I wanted to apply, and the Army had shut down their program. Mm. And I made contact with the colonel who was in charge of it back then, and he said, yeah, they weren't going to reopen it. They didn't need to have any more. I think we had 200 PAs on active duty at that time. And he said, no, we're not going to need to replace any of them. They're all going to stay. Well, you know how that goes. So I actually got out of the Army and went to a civilian program. And then I went back on active duty the day I graduated. But in the interim, they had reopened the program in my second year of PA school. So it was kind of... you never believe everything that they tell you.
Yes. You have a lot of degrees in things, so it looks like right after school, you got your bachelor's, is that right?
I got my master's. Right, I did bachelor's now.
Yep, bachelor's right, and, then science, and then a master's degree in education.
Right.
So you love to learn, I take it?
Yeah, I'm kind of a late bloomer to education. I tell people, in high school I was a solid C student, so I wasn't really motivated for college at that point. And a lot of the people that I met along the way when I was a medic sort of pointed out to me that if you want to advance, you need to get the education. So that was sort of, once the faucet got turned on, it's hard to stop. Mm-hmm. So. I enjoy learning a variety of different things.
Mm-hmm. How long were you in the military for?
If you count up all my reserve time and active duty, it was about 22 years.
Okay.
And then I had State Guard time of about 12 years. So
So you
a few years.
So you graduated, and then you joined the military, the army again, and as a PA, and then everything.
I got to spend a lot of time traveling around the world. Basically, my first duty station was Monterey, California, which is a really horrible place to go. It is most people. I'm being facetious because it's a very nice place.
Okay, because both my parents are in the military, and they met in Monterey, and I'm like, that's not what they said.
Oh, yeah, no, it's beautiful. I was being facetious. No, it's a beautiful, beautiful place. In fact, that's one of my favorite places to go visit when I've got a chance to get out to the West Coast. So, and then, you know, off to Fort Bragg, and did a lot of interesting deployments to Central America and some other places. So probably the most rewarding time for me was I spent 3 years in Berlin, Germany when the wall was up. And, you know, it was a very interesting thing. And I was actually, I will tell you, one of my Forrest Gump moments in life was standing right in front of Reagan about 50 feet when he gave that tear down this wall speech in Berlin. And it was... So every time I see that on TV, I have a flashback to that time frame. So it was a wonderful time to be there.
Where was your favorite place of all the places you've been to?
Of all the places, hands down, would be Berlin. I've been there since I retired, and went on a business trip, and it's beautiful with the wall down, and they're doing a lot of really neat things. So I've always told people if I had to leave the United States for whatever reason and pick a town somewhere in the world that I would go live, it would be Berlin. It was that impressive to me.
Were you in clinical care or emergency medicine? What was your specialty within the Army?
Yeah, in the Army, I was a PA for a variety of battalions. So you were a primary care provider at that point, but a lot of times you would spend your afternoons working either in a clinic or the emergency room, something like that. So everywhere I've gone, you wore two hats. Mm-hmm. So primary care in the morning, a specialty of some sort. I did surgery in Fort Ord in the afternoons, emergency medicine most other places, and then when I came back from Berlin, the Army sent me off to perfusion training program. So I got into cardiac surgery and ran the heart-lung machine for a number of years. So it was exciting, too. So I went from battalion aid station or community hospital level to a medical center level at that point. And I finished my career out doing that. So at least with my career with the Army.
Right. And what year was that?
That I actually left the Army? That was 1994.
1994. Yeah. And what did you do after that?
I went to a variety of new cardiac surgery programs. That was sort of my strength, was helping start up programs. Since I did that for the Army moving from Letterman in San Francisco up to Fort Lewis, Washington, I sort of had a knack for getting things organized and built up. So that's what I did when I became a civilian again, was go to several startup programs and get them started. And so I did that for a number of years before I moved down to San Antonio and enjoyed that pretty much. But those were all in small community hospitals.
So you have a Master's of Education, and you got that in 1986. So did you think you'd go into teaching?
That was my thought process. Back then, a master's degree was not really... You needed a master's degree to teach any of the PA programs. So that was sort of, I was investing for the future at that point. And it was a program through Boston University that the military offered when I was in Berlin. So I spent a lot of time doing weekend studies, and that's how they offered it. So
after that, you got your Master's of Medical Science.
Yeah, did that through St. Francis. And that was based on a lot of my perfusion studies beforehand. The specialty programs are now in the Army are going to doctorate level, but back then you'd get a master's degree for any of the specialties like orthopedics, emergency medicine, perfusion. And so I did that under the guise of my perfusion training.
Mm-hmm. And then you got your doctorate of health science. And then
yes, I did. Yeah, that was a very good course.
And then you got an associate's in nursing in 2006. So what was that about?
Well, I flash back to what I was talking about earlier about being a nurse anesthetist. I had thought at some point that would be a good combination with my perfusion skills. A lot of anesthetics get delivered by perfusionists, but I still had that bug about going to anesthesia school, so that's why I went and picked up my RN. Mm-hmm. But I really never did get to pursue it after that. I was just busy working and, you know, with all the responsibilities of house and kids and all the rest of that, it was almost impossible to do. So it's just one of the degrees tucked away.
And did you find any differences between PA education and nursing education? What were the major differences?
Oh, between PA and, well, here, let me just explain that. So I went to the Excelsior College program in New York up in Albany, and they actually, it's interesting in that you basically test out for each course. So you don't actually go sit in a lecture. You do it basically based on your previous experiences and training. So I tested out and got my RN that way. So I didn't go sit there in school. It was an interesting program.
You got a Master's of Business in 2015. I'm sorry, yep. Master's of Business
yep.
Administration.
Well, I got an MBA with a concentration in healthcare management. So, you know, I think it's important for all of us to kind of know where that money comes from that we're looking to spend. Mm-hmm. But the business side of things is an interesting side. So it just helped me see a little bit more in depth how the healthcare system works, mm-hmm. especially since I work for a medical device company. I can speak a little bit more of their language now versus the clinical stuff that I've already been able to do. It's just the business side of it helps me in my current position.
So what degree are you going to get next?
I'm actually looking at a master's in surgical practice with Oxford University in England.
All right, good on you.
So, yes, I am. Learning is a lifelong pursuit for me, so I've always got something to look at.
Mm-hmm. You've had faculty positions, haven't you? Your faculty appointments?
They're adjuncts. Yeah, pretty much adjunct. University of Washington, University of Texas, San Antonio. They're basically, just ancillary type things for them, helping them coordinate clinical things for their students. And that's pretty much what it's been.
And you've won a number of awards as well. So do you want to go into any of that? You see, like, the Legion of Merit, Lifesaver Award, PA of the Year.
Yeah, that was an interesting... Yeah, 1992, that was the Association of Military Surgeons of the United States. That was a pretty big award for me, and I was appreciative my boss put me in for it, and lo and behold, I actually got it. So I was very honored by that award.
So what about the Lifesaver Award in 1983?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
The Lifesaver Award in 1983, the Sikorsky helicopter, it says after it.
Right, that's an award they give out when you are part of a crew that goes out and picks up a casualty of some sort. And this particular casualty was in Honduras. We had gone down and picked up a couple of folks who were in desperate need of getting evacuated. So the pilot of the aircraft put us all in for the award, and you get a nice certificate and lapel pin for that. But that was a nice one. It was kind of a nice affirmation for doing a good job.
Mm-hmm. Are there any others you'd like to mention or that you're particularly proud of?
Yeah, that's probably the best one. There's a variety of things listed there, but that was probably one of the best. Plus the AMSIS Award in '92. That was, my folks got to see that one, so that was a nice one.
And then, are you a member of this of SAPA? SAPA.
Oh yeah, I've been I'm a lifelong member of SAPA. I was president of the organization twice.
Okay.
So if you make it through president, they give you a life membership, which. I've been 40, almost 37 years, 38 years almost now. So,
So when you were president, were there any kind of issues that came up that you had to deal with?
Well,
or like a...
Yeah, actually, that was back when we were doing the commissioning for Army PAs. So there was a lot of discussion and, you know, how we were going to approach that as an organization. And Glenn Combs, I think, was the president of AAPA at that point, and he came down to talk to us about all of that. So, yeah, that was a pretty hot topic for us at that point.
Yeah, and when did the Army allow PAs to be commissioned?
That was in 1992.
1992, yeah. So that was when you were president, one of the times?
I think I was president before that time period.
Okay.
I want to say when I got shipped off to Berlin, I was president, and then when I came back, I filled in for somebody who had to step down because they were being shipped out. So I was sort of selected for that position.
All right, did you help out with the lobbying?
That was when that, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you help out with the lobbying for commissioning? Did you, you know, call people up and try to convince them, or?
Well, mostly with the membership, because I don't think we were allowed, as an Army officer, we're not allowed to promote our own agenda. The organization could on our behalf, but since I was an active duty officer at that time, we were kind of told not to make a big deal so that somebody could come back and complain about that, because I'm not sure if that was legal or not. We had the AAPA voice our concerns on our behalf. Let's put it that way.
Okay,
so the AAPA was very helpful. They were very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Our admin assistant was very impressed that you went to jungle school, so would you like to talk about that some for her?
jungle school, yeah, that was down there. That was down in Panama. I went a couple of times. You go down, as the medical officer, you don't really have to do a lot of, I mean, you go down and do the jungle survival school, but it's not as hard as it is on the infantry soldiers. They have to go through all kinds of training lanes and touch all kinds of sharp bushes down there and be chased around by snakes. So, it's an interesting school. You learn to live out in the under canopy, and you learn to live to be pretty miserable in the rain. So that's pretty much the extent of that school. You learn to eat bugs too. I mean, that's one of the courses. Yeah. So I went several times, and I enjoyed it. Panama's an interesting and beautiful country, but it's very humid and it rains a lot. So you can imagine how much fun that was, but. Yeah, it was worthwhile. Taking care of troops is always fun.
Yeah, but how long were these courses? Like a few weeks, a few months? Like how?
This particular one it was 3 weeks. Jungle school was 3 weeks. Yeah, and they don't actually offer it anymore. That's unless they moved it to Hawaii. Years ago they were going to do it in Hawaii, but I don't know if they still do that or not. But when I was on active duty, it was always in Panama. So. We used to rotate, I was with 7th Division at that point, and our mission was basically the Central America region, and so our battalions all went to jungle school at least once or twice a year, so you always got an opportunity to go down there.
Yeah, and it was fun, right?
Yeah, actually, I enjoyed it, but, you know, like I said, it was easier on me than a lot of the poor guys slinging rifles, so.
Right. So did you have a mentor at any point, especially in your early days as a PA, or maybe before?
Early days?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, well, I've had mentors throughout my life that kind of helped me along. It's kind of funny, I'm in Salt Lake City this week, and one of the nurses who actually encouraged me to further my education is here with her husband, and she was my ward nurse when I was in Korea as a medic. Years ago at the 120 back, and so we've had a reunion here in the last few months, and she certainly helped propel me down the road. So I've had her, Barb, and then once I became a PA, there's any number of senior PAs that I was working with that always mentored me. One guy that comes to mind at Fort Bragg was a guy by the name of Stan Shank, who was probably one of the roughest old special forces medics you could ever run across, but he was a great teacher. And and he's still around somewhere. I think he's retired in Tennessee somewhere, but he was a great mentor. And then following that, I had a colonel in Berlin who was the hospital commander who was a very driving force for me. And he went on to become the Army Surgeon General a few years later. His name was Ron Blank, and he's still floating around out there in Maryland, I think. But I've always had somebody to mentor me throughout my career. And I guess now I'm at the point where I'm mentoring the younger folks, similar to what these folks are doing for me. So I guess it's kind of the payback or pay forward theory of your professional career. So I'm always thankful for all those folks that helped me, whether I named them or not. There's always been somebody there who's kind of looked out for me and helped me along and pushed me to learn more about things.
And so what has been the most satisfying aspect of your career as a PA?
Probably the most satisfying aspect is I like the one-on-one patient interaction. I like to be able to talk and educate people to whatever their condition is. Right now I do a lot of emergency room work, and that's probably the best part of the job, is you can go in, figure out what their problems are, make the diagnosis, but rather than just go in and coldly drop it on them, you go in and explain to them why things happen, what we're going to do to fix it, what you need to do to help yourself. So it's a very educational effort for them. So that's the part I enjoy the best, and especially when they come back and they actually track you down and thank you for helping them get through whatever the particular problem was. And I've had that happen a lot of times, where they'll come back and they'll say that just the time I spent with them made a big difference. So that's the most rewarding part of what I do, and that's been for forever. Mm-hmm. But you know, you just have to have a good approach to how you take care of patients. Mm-hmm. So.
And speaking of patients, do you have one that was the most memorable, or your most memorable moment as a PA?
Oh, gosh. There's a bunch of them, but one that sticks out was when I was in Central America. We had was taking care of a special forces detachment down there, and they brought a kid in who had been shot in the chest, and my supervising doc, who was a family practice guy, was up in the mountains somewhere, passing out Motrin, I guess, but he left me there in the little jungle hospital that we had, and I had this kid come in with a gunshot wound, and we had to stick some chest tubes in him, and he had blown out a subclavian artery with a high-powered rifle round, and the trauma surgeon, I called him up for some advice, and he says, well, you need to do a thoracotomy and go up there and clamp off his subclavian, and I said, okay, well, I've done ATLS, so I guess I could do that. So I opened this kid's chest, and there wasn't much left in there. So the patient finally died. But it was an amazing moment where you sort of felt like, okay, it's all on you now. So you got to do something. So we did it, you know, by the book, and it was a good training opportunity for the medics that were with me, because we, you know, we had to go through and try and save this kid's life best we could out in the middle of nowhere. So he's the one that sticks out probably in my mind as not a good memory, but it was the most memorable.
Most memorable one, yeah. Okay, and one.
I always wanted to know more about what I needed to do about things. I mean, I was trained to do it, but I just felt that we were sort of inadequate for what needed to be done in the middle of a jungle. Mm-hmm. So, and we were.
What's the most interesting experience you've encountered as a PA? So maybe not patient-centric, but is there like an interesting story? Or
There's many that I guess I could run through my mind right now. But the most interesting story as a PA, that's really a tough question. That's probably the toughest question.
We saved the toughest for last.
Yeah, I guess so. Wow. Actually, the most interesting experience I guess I would have had is all of the students, the PA students or students in general, because I take all kinds of different students, but it's watching their eyes when you explain something and it clicks and you can see it in their face. Mm-hmm. because they might have read about something in a book, but until they've actually experienced it, and a lot of that is my reference is either putting something like a central line or chest tube in, or doing surgery, open heart surgery. When you've got somebody there and they don't know what to expect, and you kind of walk them through it the first time, and you can watch the thought processes. And when they actually understand what they're watching you do or watching you teach them do, that's probably the most rewarding thing to watch for me. That's the greatest experience I've had. And I've had that a number of times where they actually, you feel like you've actually connected and made that difference in that particular moment for them. So that's probably the easiest way to explain that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of in that same vein, do you have any advice to people starting off as PAs or who are interested in a career as a PA?
Yeah, make sure that you go out and talk to and watch and shadow as many people as you physically and possibly can with an idea of getting into something. A lot of the kids, I want to call them kids because they're much younger than I am now, but they come into it with sort of an uncertainty of what they're looking at doing, whether or not it's what they want to do or it's something exactly what they want to do. But a lot of them come unprepared in terms of having shadowed somebody. I think most programs require that they shadow, you know, one PA and have them write a letter. Well, that's great, but you really need to, if you're really going to do this right, you need to go in and find several more people to follow in different areas. Because pediatrics is different from surgery, is different from ER work, is different from a variety of other specialties. So if you kind of narrowed it down to where you think you might want to go, primary care, surgery, something like that, find some people who will take some time and talk to you and let you follow them around for a couple of days. And that's going to help you get a really better understanding of what a PA is going to do and what they can do. Because it's a lot different now than it was when I was looking at these particular careers. I was fortunate that I had people that took me under their wing, but that was part of my job. So a lot of these are extracurricular for these kids, for these young people who are coming through now because they're in school or they've got a job somewhere else where it's not medically related, and they really need to have a better exposure. So I guess that would be my advice to them is get as much exposure to as many PAs as you can. That's as simple as it gets.
That's fantastic advice. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today, sir. I've enjoyed talking to you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling me.